This is a Telegraph cycling podcast live from the Tour de France, supported by Jaguar, with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney, and Daniel Free.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniel Free.
Hello.
Daniel looks like a drowned rat. How are we, old chaps, and where are we, Lionel? This is our third live podcast.
It's becoming a tradition, isn't it? Wednesday night live at the Tour de France. We are in Barcelonnette at the foot of Pralou. The final climb of stage 17 of the Tour de France. We're in some kind of tin-roofed bunker, and when the heavens opened after the stage today, it was drumming on the roof here incredibly loudly. I thought our live broadcast might be in jeopardy, but we're okay.
Well, you can still hear the thunder rumbling in the distance. That's not Lionel's stomach, listeners. It is getting towards dinner time. But we've been handed something here. Rob Hales approached us, a rival podcaster.
Don't mention his name. He's just handed me what looks like a Pinocchio Christmas decoration, which is terribly, terribly good of him. I think Rob's been staying in Italy the last couple of days. Actually, I think I might have mentioned yesterday, he said, did you want anything from Italy? And I said, bring me back a Pinocchio.
Will that be going on the Christmas tree at the Home of Cycling later this year?
No doubt, no doubt.
Excellent.
He's good at that. Right, so listen, first proper day in the Alps, let's rattle through what happened. That's your job, Lionel.
Yeah, we'll rattle through what happened, and then in the second half we'll take some of the questions that have been coming in on Twitter. If you want to add to that list of questions, it's hashtag CPLive if you want to ask us a question. But yeah, stage 17, Dean Leban to Pralou. First proper day in the Alps after the rest day. Big break went away. Some big names in it. Rigoberto Urán, Andrew Talansky, Thibaut Pinot, Nicholas Roach, Adam Yates. And they got up the road and they really shaped the whole of the race. On the early climbs, on the Col d'Alos, it really sort of blew apart a bit. And it was Simon Geschke of the Giant Alpecin team who made an incredible attack, really impressive attack, and held off a spirited late challenge from Andrew Talansky of Cannondale Garmin. Thibaut Pinot was one of the others who was trying to chase up to him. He came to grief on the descent of the Col d'Alos, had a little moment watching here in the press room, there was a real moment, a roar, as he Thibaut Pinot went down on a left-hand bend, and Geschke held on to win one of the most impressive stage victories of the Tour so far. The other two big stories of the day are that TJ van Garderen of BMC Racing, who was lying third this morning, is out of the race. He was suffering very early on the early climbs, was off the back in the first 50 kilometres, fought his way back up, and then a bad case of bad timing, really, because that was the point at which Tinkoff Saxo's Alberto Contador and Michael Rogers tried to make a bit of a duo attack, and Van Garderen within 10-15 minutes was rolling very slowly and finally decided to call it a day, apparently suffering illness, certainly weak and not looking like he was going to survive the stage. The other incident was Alberto Contador's fall on the descent of the Col d'Alos. A little bit of confusion over exactly how that happened at the moment. Some say he bumped into Michael Rogers and went down, and he has lost time and slipped a little bit in the overall.
Also a little bit of developing controversy there, because Rafał Majka apparently was told to wait and didn't wait. The source of the information that he was told to wait is the wife of Stephen de Jong on Twitter, who Stephen de Jong is the director sportif at Tinkoff Saxo. She tweeted that he had been told to wait and ignored the instruction. He claimed at the finish that he wasn't told to wait. So a little bit of a controversy developing there, Daniel.
I think Sagan also confirmed that. Sagan said that he heard on the radio Majka being told to wait, and he didn't wait. That's not the first time he has apparently contravened orders in this Tour de France.
Word for Simon Geschke. Popular winner. I think he was especially motivated after appearing on the podcast on Sunday.
I think we can take almost all the credit for that, surely.
Well, you know, I said, Simon, if the legs are good, if the sensations are good on Wednesday. Was it Sunday he appeared in our podcast, or Monday? I can't lose track. Oh, there's lightning now. There's thunder and lightning. And the rain, you'll probably hear the rain. Yeah, Simon Geschke, very popular rider, nice chap, all-round good bloke, and you know, he's been sort of knocking at the door for a few years, and gets a stage win, and he was very emotional afterwards, which is nice to see as well. It meant a lot to him, and I think, you know, his team Giant Alpecin is one of the more popular teams in the race. They've been close this year with John Degenkolb, Tom Dumoulin way back in Utrecht, and they've got their stage win.
And nice reward for Geschke, because he's been very aggrieved about the accommodation that his team has had over the past couple of days and throughout the tour. In fact, he said that the billet that they're in, or they have been in the last couple of nights, reminded him of a 1997 school trip. There have been numerous complaints from that team, and this issue of hotels and accommodation has really come to the fore. I think most teams, most riders have grinned and borne it.
Yeah.
Over the last few years, but since now it is very much on the agenda, this issue of motorhomes, everyone is really speaking out. Chira and I visited Filippo Pozzato yesterday in his hotel. He wasn't very happy. Jose Serpa, who is rooming with Filippo Pozzato, got up in the middle of the night and soaked a towel with cold water, slept naked on the cold towel. Rather too much information, but what else would you expect from Pozzato?
Well, the heat has certainly amplified this issue. We all went down to the Sky Hotel, where they've been put for 3 days, along with AG2R. They're basically next to a motorway junction at Sisteron, with backing onto an abattoir, and it was a really unpleasant place to be. Loads of flies buzzing around in the breakfast room, and all buzzing around in the car park. Just not a very pleasant place to have to spend 3 days. And I was talking to some of the Sky staff and saying, you wouldn't come here on holiday. I mean, these guys are trying to ride the Tour de France. And as Daniel's been saying in the car over the recent days, the Pandora's box is open on this issue, and we'll see how it develops.
We unfortunately, because we're broadcasting live, we can't play your new Chiro theme tune, which has been kindly composed by friends of the podcast, the Welsh band who composed the Match of the Day 2 theme tune as well. Lionel, you pronounced their name extremely well the other day.
I did, but I don't have it in front of me, so I can't. You put me on the spot here. I can't remember what they're called, unfortunately. Do apologise about that. I would have been able to play in the Chiro's theme or Chiro's anthem, but running this kind of DJ desk here, it's a bit like trying to rub your stomach and pat the top of your head at the same time. Just thinking.
A long-winded way of saying that Chiro's here.
Chiro, what are you going to tell us in your 5 minutes?
I don't know exactly, but one thing I'm sure, I have no time. I descended now from the happy finish of today in Praloop. I have to write a lot of things, a lot of stuff to do, but I'm here.
Giro, 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 Giro.
Well, that's E. Newell, the Welsh band, and that was a little bit of Chiro's theme. Not sure that came out terribly well, but the important thing is that, you know, the spirit of the thing is there.
Exactly, the spirit, Lionel, because it's the love for our listeners and the love for all of you that bring me here now.
Anyway, enough nonsense, Chiro. Why did Vincenzo Nibali not attack on the descent of the Alos?
Because in my opinion, and in his opinion, because as usual I spoke to him a lot after the stage, as my duty, as my mission, in his opinion it was too risky. Too risky to attack, also because the condition of the road was not really good, and so it was maybe a little bit scared.
Well, Chiro, this time last week we doubted whether Nibali would even make it to Valence. We've been proved wrong there, and he does seem to be getting better as the days go by. He looked good on the climb.
Yes, it's true. Now, at this point of the Tour de France, in my opinion, his goal could be maybe to finish the Tour de France in the first five position. Hopefully, he would also like to win a stage, but this seems more difficult to me, because apart from Froome, no one of the other main GC contenders have won a stage right now, if I'm not wrong. And so for him, it will be really difficult to win a stage, hopefully a position in the first five.
I saw Vincenzo Nibali this morning at the start, deep in conversation with Oleg Tinkoff. I have to say, Tinkoff isn't really that discriminatory in the riders that he approaches and puts his arm around. I saw him just before that with Cavendish, as Mark Cavendish was riding to sign on, and Tinkoff appeared from stage left with his arm. Oh, Daniel's looking thoughtful. He had his arm around Cavendish, and they were locked in conversation for a while, and then he approached Nibali, and he was locked in conversation with him. Have you got something on?
We think that Nibali might have a couple of teams sniffing around, don't we, Ciro? We might have an offer or two, just in case things go wrong with Vinokurov, and just in case they decide to offload him.
I've got a little story about from the peloton. We know that Chris Froome marched onto the Astana team bus and had a little altercation with Vincenzo Nibali after the crash that saw Tony Martin out of the tour. I can't remember where that was now. It was up in Brittany, wasn't it? Yeah, Love. And there was an altercation, an exchange of words between Froome and Nibali. It was a bit ugly. He left the bus. Nibali didn't speak to Froome for 4 days after that, until the day that the story came out that Alexander Vinokurov said that Vincenzo Nibali can look for a new team next year. Apparently the day that story came out, Nibali rode up to Froome in the bunch and said, "Hey, Chris, can I join Team Sky?"
Richard, maybe he's the best story that I have heard in this tour.
The problem is, Chris Froome hadn't seen the story, the Vinokurov story, so he didn't know what the hell Nibali was talking about.
Yeah, but I must confess that my bet is, because I'm really a courageous guy, I mean, I have no fear to say what I think, and certainly maybe, I don't know if I'm right or not, but my bet is that Vincenzo Nibali is going to stay with Astana team also next year. Certainly at the end of this contract in 2016, he will find another team. But my opinion, next season, he will remain in Astana.
Now, I've got a question about today's stage, Daniel. Thibaut Pinot, he was chasing Simon Geschke. He looked like he was closing on him a bit until he crashed. Would he have caught him and won the stage had he not crashed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he lost his nerve, didn't he? And it brought back memories, I'm sure, that crash of his nightmare on descents in 2013, which he seemed to have overcome. Last year, he descended pretty well. This year, he's descended fairly well up until now. And he got the yips, didn't he? He got the jitters. And he said that himself. He felt blocked. He did a catastrophic descent. And, you know, the form was clearly there. The legs were there. And he has vowed to give it another go tomorrow, Pino.
Are we okay, Lionel? You look a bit concerned there.
Well, I just saw a message flash up saying we've lost our internet connection, but I think we're okay. If we're still broadcasting, send us a tweet to #CPLive and let us know. If we've fallen off the air, we'll just carry on anyway, because this whole file will then be uploaded and people can listen again.
Question has come in for Ciro Live. Ciro Live, he's excited at that live. Well, actually, there are two questions. Someone asked earlier, do you shave your legs? No, he doesn't. I can confirm that. He doesn't need to ask that. Definitely not. If he does, then it grows back very, very quickly. Carl Dolan asks, last week Ciro said he was going on holiday after the tour. Can you get him to confess where he goes?
Yes, only for you. 5 days in Naples. 7 days in Calabria, a region of the southern part of Italy, and 3 days in Sicily. So this is all, but listeners, this is only the first part of my holiday, because you can't even imagine how many holidays I will do when the cycling season is finished. You can't even imagine.
Well, before we go on to some questions, some of which will address today's stage. Richard, I think you've got a few important messages to tell everybody. Is that right?
Important messages. Yeah, I'm getting tweets saying, you went away and then you came right back. Still got you online. So that's encouraging. We seem to disappear briefly, but we're back. Okay, so the messages, the official messages are... Sorry, Ciro, are you wanting to say something else? You're making hand gestures.
Yes, because I'm really sad, but I have to go. But I don't know if we already talked about the big surprise that for our listener is coming on our podcast, hopefully tomorrow or in next days. Listeners already know?
Tomorrow. No, you can tell them.
Listeners, it's difficult to say anything because I don't want to ruin the surprise, but there will be me sealing the podcast and maybe the best rider of our peloton here.
And with that, he's off, scurrying, running. Oh, that's he's playing that up. That's a new run. That's not that's an affected run by Chiro. He's embellishing it.
That reminds me, of my book about Usain Bolt is out tomorrow. He just sprinted.
One podcast suspension for that.
Sneak that in. Hey, listen, I've got a few official announcements. I've got to encourage people to become a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. Today we launched our long-awaited perk, the Podcast Independent Reform Commission, which is our sort of look at all things doping. It's a bit of a marathon podcast, over 2 hours long. We've got interviews in there with Jonathan Vauters, several other people, some of whom I can remember and some not. But anyway, it's all in there. It's something that we've been sort of working on for quite a while. £5 to become a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. We're running a competition as well. We've got two sort of bundles of goodies, including a t-shirt, the Tour is the Tour t-shirt, a copy of Daniel's book Mountain High, a copy of Lionel's published Sean Kelly autobiography, and a copy of my book Etap. So one of these bundles will go to an existing friend of the podcast, chosen at random. The other bundle will go to a new friend of the podcast who signed up between yesterday when we launched the competition and the end of the tour. We should mention that tweeting, retweeting, liking or sharing tweets about this may well enhance your chances of winning.
Competition doping, that is. But
absolutely. We have to say thank you to Jaguar for sponsoring all our podcasts, our morning podcast Kilometre Zero and our evening podcast. Thank you very much to them. Without them, they wouldn't be happening. And thank you to British Eurosport for sponsoring Pedler de Charme, which is our daily competition. Now, we forgot the T-shirts this morning, and Mark Cavendish seemed to be in quite a good mood. It might have been a good morning to have presented him with his Pedler de Charme T-shirt. So we've got a couple to catch up on. Who is today's Pedler de Charme? Shall we ask for live nominations?
Let's ask for live nominations. Who is today's Pedler de Charme? Send your nominations to us on Twitter at cycling_podcast, and we will pick one at the end of the show. Let's crack on with a couple of questions. First up, Sue Tyler has asked us, how much cycling do you each get to watch each day, or do you catch snippets? And I thought we could use that as an opportunity to just briefly explain a kind of day in the life of a journalist on the tour. I'm quite happy to do that. What do? We get up, we go to the start town, almost all morning. We go to the start town, we pick up the newspapers, we go and hang around at the team buses and vehicles and try to talk to riders and team managers, get interviews for the podcast, and Daniel particularly picks up lots of snippets of gossip that he drops in several days later, so that nobody's aware that of where the gossip has come from. And then, generally speaking, we drive on an alternative course which the organisers print in the road book, and that takes us the most direct or quickest route from the start town to the finish town, and we arrive at the finish in time to watch the last couple of hours of the stage on television in the press room. And after that, there's all the press conferences and the opportunities to go back out to the buses and talk to more riders. And that is basically a day in the life on the tour.
I try and always watch the race as much as I can. You know, we had a great opportunity to do that at Mond at the airfield when the tent is right by the sort of final bend, and it was great to run out and watch. It's just great to watch the race. My Kilometre Zero this morning was the day that I spent with the fans on the Col de Monts a couple of days ago. And I just camped out there for the afternoon, didn't have a clue what was happening in the race, which was slightly frustrating. But nevertheless, it was a really great day out. And that excitement that you feel when you see the helicopter in the valley approaching and the vehicles come through with a sort of increasing sense of urgency, the thrill of that never really goes away, or it hasn't yet.
Absolutely. Here's another one, or another couple of questions that kind of lead on to the same thing. Martin Shaw asks, are these days in the Alps too hard, leaving the riders too tired to attack? Well, we've only had one day in the Alps so far, but I would say it has been a hard tour up to this point. And Wayne Bradley says, would a grand tour with only one or two or category climbs make for more exciting racing? He thinks it would.
Yes, I thought that yesterday.
The all-category climbs are the biggest, the highest, the longest. And we've been talking about this a little bit, or you two were talking about the idea of one day running a Tour de France with all kind of moyenne montagne stages, just stages like the one into Gap before the rest day, or the one to Mond,
I mean, that's an appealing idea, but do you think it would work in practice, Daniel?
I think it would, but people don't like it. And the 2009 Giro d'Italia was very much like that, the centenary edition. It started in the north, went south, so it was a sort of upside-down Giro, lots of moyenne montagne, and people really did not go for it whatsoever. They like these totems of the Giro and the Tour, the Tourmalet, the Galibier, etc., even if the race tends to be fairly boring. At times on those climbs, we pointed out how the Tourmalet tends to see fairly sterile racing these days. But I kind of agree that it would be interesting once in a while, when maybe once every 15 years, to throw in a Tour that had more moyenne montagne than high mountain.
I'd love to see that. I think that idea popped into my head, especially after seeing Peter Sagan the last few days, the way he's been racing, getting in the break every single day, which is hard to do. Now, no doubt if it was that kind of race and a rider like that had a realistic possibility of winning, he'd be much more heavily marked. But nevertheless, it would reward a very different kind of racing. I think the great scenario would be a race like that with one high mountain stage, lots of these undulating stages, and six-man teams. That would be truly exciting, I think. That would be it'd be a wonderful tour. Can I just, so that we don't forget, Pedler Ducharme, Trudgeon is asking, mentioning her several, I think it's her, Trudgeon, I do believe, apologies if it's not, but we've had some correspondence with Trudgeon. Can anybody confirm if Trudgeon is a male, is female? I think she is. She's repeatedly nominated Peter Sagan. Peter Sagan is a winner. He has won Pedler Ducharme. We just haven't got around to presenting him with his T-shirt yet. Simon Geschke is far and away the most popular nomination today. Seems like a nice bloke. Let's give it to him today.
Yeah, we don't usually give the Pedler Ducharme T-shirt to the winner of the stage, but in this case,
he has got a hipster look. I think he'll actually wear it.
Yeah, I think
in normal life.
Yeah, when he's riding his fixie down to the coffee shop, he will no doubt wear his Pedler Ducharme T-shirt. Here's one that I can probably kick off. Richie Close asked, to date, which team has been the biggest disappointment and performed well below expectations? Well, I was looking at the team's classification, and I wasn't using that as a guide to which team's doing best or worst, because it's a bit of a strange competition, isn't it, the team's classification. But I have to say, Cannondale Garmin, they really needed a good, decent result today, and they did get one, with Andrew Talansky finishing second on the stage. Had it worked out slightly differently, he might have had a chance of catching Geschke on the final climb. But last year, they won a stage. In fact, they've won a stage every year since 2011. I think 2010 was their last Tour without a stage win. I think perhaps because of the way that Talansky and Daniel Martin went backwards on the first day of the Pyrenees, it's given an impression that they're having a poor Tour. What do you think, Daniel?
I think this Tour has underlined the fact that what we have at the moment is a cyclisme à deux vitesses, that phrase that was used for many years with regard to doping, the dopers and the non-dopers. I think now the cyclisme à deux vitesses we have is one of the haves and the have-nots of professional cycling. There is a huge gulf in budgets now between the richest teams and teams like Carmen Gannondale, as I like to call them. The French teams are not excelling in this Tour de France, the Europe cars, the FDJs, I think really if you correlate the budgets with results, you see that we've got pretty much what we should have expected on this Tour de France.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the teams that you would expect to perhaps go through the Tour without picking up much, Lamprey have won a stage, Katusha have won a stage with Joaquim Rodriguez, Lotto Soudal, of course, Andre Greipel has been very good, Giant Alpecin got off the mark today. I suppose you would put Trek Factory Racing in there with Garmin, Cannondale Garmin, as teams that you would expect to have made more of an impact on the race. I mean, IM Cycling have now got Matthias Frank up into the top 10, so that's performing above expectations, and it's the Europe car, Cofidis. You know, they're the biggest teams, because, you know, Bora Argon, Bretagne Sechet, they're the kind of the minnows, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's a concern, isn't it, with Europe car especially. There's been news, I think, today that the riders will be free to look for other teams if Jean-René Bernardeau doesn't have a new sponsor by a date that comes up very soon. What's the date, Daniel? Is
it 10 to 15 days, he said.
I mean, what are the chances? I mean, he struggled to get Europe Carver sort of last minute solution a few years ago. I think they've had very good value for their sponsorship. They've ridden consistently well at the Tour. They came in at just the right time, and you know, they haven't had such a good year this year, but still got some very good riders. Will, I mean, not much. It doesn't seem to be much hope, does there?
I'd pay Jean-René Bernadet €5 million a year to parade down the Vendée Coast with a gaunt sweater slung over his shoulders and white chinos and blue deck shoes. No,
this sounds just right up your street, Daniel. Should we do a few?
That's all he wants. He only is looking for €5.5 million. I don't know if that's exactly what his budget is now, but it's certainly not very much money in the context of the World Tour.
Can we do a few questions in sort of quickfire form? Just one of us take the answers. Daniel, is it time for Pinot and Bardet, that's Thibaut Pinot and Romain Bardet, to leave the comfort of their French teams and branch out before they stagnate?
I would suggest that they're not in particularly comfortable environments at all, particularly Pinot. There's been a huge amount of pressure heaped onto his shoulders this year as the leader of that team, really the sole leader of that team, particularly with Arthur Vichot and Arnaud Démare really flattering to deceive all season. So I don't think it's particularly comfortable for him. Romain Bardet is someone who would probably suit Team Sky because a lot of the things that they obsess over, the marginal gains, he's already doing a lot of that and he's very into all of that. Whether his riding style, his racing style would suit Team Sky, he's quite an aggressive rider. He doesn't really necessarily follow the formulae that Sky tend to ride to. I don't know.
It's absolutely hammering down here again. You can probably hear that in the background. Hopefully it's not spoiling your enjoyment of the podcast. Richard, Nugget 48 asks, do you think Mark Cavendish will win on the Champs-Élysées on Sunday?
Before I answer that question, Lionel, can I ask you whether you're going to go and pick up the car and bring it to the press room?
When it stops raining, yeah.
Will Mark Cavendish win on the Champs-Élysées? He might. There's a chance, but Andre Greipel is possibly going to be the man to beat. It's going to be quite close, but you know, Cavendish won 4 years in a row in the Champs-Élysées, didn't he? And that was his, that was really his terrain. In fact, he's never been beat, has he? Oh, sorry, he's beaten by Kittel, wasn't he, in the Champs-Élysées in 2013. I mean, you know, at this point in the race, you get even someone like Christophe is probably going to be a bit more of a threat when everybody's tired and, you know, forming a bit more with that sort of build-up of fatigue over 3 weeks. It's not a normal sprint, but yeah, Cavendish, why not?
And Daniel, what do you think of the Dutch GC contenders? This is from Wheeler News, who I assume is Dutch. Do you think Hessink will get on the podium?
I don't think he will, unfortunately, because there is a lot of quality still in that top 10. Guys who will want to really salvage their tour, redeem themselves, people like Nibali. And the Movistar pair of Quintana and Valverde are poised, I think, to really have a good go at Chris Froome as well, because I think Sky are losing their pieces. Froome is stubbornly following every attack, which I think is a very foolhardy tactic. I don't think he can carry on doing that day after day because he's setting himself up for the classic 1-2 from Movistar. So I think they could engineer themselves into a very dangerous position as far as Froome's concerned. Hastings, I think, will ride consistently through to Paris. Mollema will too, but it probably won't be enough to get them onto the podium. Well, it certainly won't be in Mollema's case.
Hart Cyclery asked whether it's time to ban power meters, visible power meters on the handlebars, as well as race radios. So obviously this debate about you know, the numbers and the way that the races race to those numbers, that's starting to resonate with people, and inevitably there will be people who call for a ban on the technology within the races.
I don't really agree. I don't really, you know, that it, I think most guys race to the energy they have left, to the, and I don't really think that it has that big of an impact on racing. And it's just a tactic as well, and there are different there can be tactics dictated from the car, there can be tactics dictated according to premeditated plans, there can be tactics dictated by the whim, the spur of a moment, and there can be tactics dictated by power meters. And I just think that it's another dimension, another element of tactics.
Yeah, there's Bradley Wiggins kind of rode that way. There was that story of Cadel Evans attacking in the Alps, and Michael Rogers saying no, we ride to 410 watts or whatever, and he won't stay away. It's probably not 410 watts before anybody comes back on that. But Chris Froome is not looking at his power meter when Quintana attacks and he jumps after him. You had a good story, I think, Daniel, about Mark Cavendish and his power meter in his first ever Tour de France, where he was so alarmed by the figure on one climb that he went up to David Miller or somebody and said, David, what's up? I'm never going to survive. My power is at whatever. And Miller's advice was to go back to the team car and get a bit of gaffer tape for the screen of his power meter.
Here's another one. In a race up Alpe d'Huez, what would be the finishing order between Richard, Daniel and Lionel?
Richard, Daniel and Lionel.
No. Rich, I mean, there's history here. I'm a far better climber than you. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, I've ridden with both of you. You were having a jour sans the day we rode together, Daniel.
I don't really ride anymore. And plus, I'm giving away 20 kilos to you guys. Well, it's only to Richard.
20 kilos, wow.
The rain's so heavy, I could barely hear what Daniel said there. But I don't think it was complimentary.
Right, well, we're still going through some questions. Let's pick out... Somebody's asked, fellow vicar, I think, has asked, what sort of book advance would a Sky whistleblower get, if there was one? And does the absence of a book blowing the whistle on Sky point to non-cheating? That's a very interesting way of looking at it, actually.
Yeah, it is. And what was the second part again?
Well, does the fact that there hasn't been a book blowing the whistle on Sky mean that there's no whistle to blow, perhaps?
Well, there was a book last year by Michael Barry, Shadows on the Road, I think it was called. Michael Barry, former Team Sky rider, retired. He had a job lined up with the team, apparently, as a press officer, and that went when he was one of the people named in the USADA Reasoned Decision report. He testified against Lance Armstrong. Now, in his book, he does talk a little bit about the grey area of, painkillers, tramadol and things like that. He's not specific. He rode for US Postal. He also rode for Team High Road and Team Sky. And he isn't specific about which teams, but you can infer from what he says in terms of the timings and so on that, well, we know that riders at Team Sky have used tramadol in the past. I don't think it's been a sort of team policy, but we know that riders in all teams have used tramadol. It's not a banned product. But if anybody had an axe to grind against Team Sky, it might be Michael Barry. You would think, given that he might feel that he was harshly treated and that the job that he thought he had didn't transpire. I don't know. What do you think, Daniel?
I've been waiting for Sylvain Calzati, My Truth, for the last 5 years, and it still hasn't appeared on bookshelves.
Sylvain Calzati, of course, started out with Team Sky, didn't last very long, was one of the sort of token Frenchmen, really. It signed at the outset in 2010.
Well, a lot of people who've left Team Sky have signed non-disclosure agreements, as is quite common practice, staff, staff mainly. Michael Barry won't have signed a non-disclosure agreement, even if thought, because he retired. That's just an observation.
This is getting very interactive. Hart Cyclery has thanked us for answering the question and said, shame that Daniel was, dismissive of the idea that power meters might be banned. I thought it was a good question, and it's certainly a debate that may well come up as this narrative kind of unfolds. But here, we'll do a couple more and then we'll wrap up for this evening. Julian asks, with cycling being so big and important to France, why is there no super rich super team to match Sky? Well, first of all, I would say that the demographic of the cycling fans in France is quite different to the demographic in the UK, where it has become the sign of the pursuit of the mammal and the female equivalent of the mammal, the kind of the middle class, quite people with quite high disposable income have become attracted to cycling. It's reaching those people much more than it does in France, where it still is kind of a working class sport. And if you look, not only are there more teams in France, if you combined all the five French teams here, AG2R, Française des Jeux, Cofidis, Europcar and so on, you perhaps would have one super team. But if you look at the sponsors, Of the French teams. Europcar isn't even the national or multinational branch of Europcar. It's just the Vendée region of the Europcar organisation. Cofidis is basically French Wonga. It sells loans to people who are struggling to get through to the next payday. The Française des Jeux is the national lottery, again, something that it's a French lottery, something that perhaps appeals to people with not a huge amount of disposable income. And I think that's one of the reasons why France and the French relationship with the Tour is the way it is.
But it's also because they haven't hit the jackpot and won the Tour for an awfully long time. Just to go back to the point about power meters and why it would be difficult to ban them and perhaps not wise to ban them, I think it's very, very difficult to ban something that amateur cyclists are allowed to use and will be using. I mean, I know that some people will contradict that and point out that amateur cyclists can use lighter bikes than professional cyclists, but I do think that creates a bit of a problem, and it's a bit of an awkward sort of contrived compromise, really.
James Bellinger asks quite an interesting question, because this was also something we were talking about in the car the other day. Should the teams be more evenly matched with an NFL-style draft system, picking the riders, so that the talent would be more evenly distributed? It would enable the smaller teams to have a perhaps first pick of the best riders, like they do in American sports. Richard, you weren't keen on my idea when I suggested that.
I'm not that sure, despite having read a few books about American sport, I'm not that sure how it works in America. You know, the teams have different budgets and things, don't they? The problem in cycling is that each team has obviously a commercial sponsor, and I don't see them ceding control over, you know, hiring and firing exactly who they want. I don't know, but I'm not exactly sure how it would work in cycling.
It's something that maybe Velon, as an organisation, if it was going to get its act together and say, right, we're going to have 16 franchises in professional cycling, and we're going to have a pool of, I don't know, 250 riders, and divide those 250 between the 16 teams, and you'd have a sort of draft system, and you maybe would be able to have first pick of certain nationalities if your sponsors were in those markets. I mean, it would take an incredible kind of back to the drawing board type approach, and cycling just isn't in a place where anyone, they can't even agree on the smallest things, let alone something as fundamental as that.
By the way, we can see people retweeting our competition tweet, trying to get ahead, trying to get a little advantage over the competition. We can see you, we're clocking your names, so, you know, do bear in mind that any likes, favourites, retweets, it's on Facebook as well, that competition, any kind of sharing might enhance your chances.
Well, I think we ought to wrap up there. The rain is easing up here in Barcelona, so that gives us a little window of opportunity to run back to the car. We've gone on long enough now. We're back with our normal show on Thursday. There's also a Kilometre Zero on Thursday morning, which is about team vehicles, buses, cars, motorhomes, campervans, all that kind of thing is covered in that. Friday, we're hoping to have a pretty special Kilometre Zero to round off our series of morning shows, and we'll be carrying on to Paris. Only 4 days to go now, chaps.
Yes, getting tiring, isn't it? A little bit. You know, we still feel very privileged to be here, and we're still enjoying it, but, you know, getting a little bit tired.
Absolutely. Well, I'm hoping that the storm means that the temperature overnight is going to drop and I'll get a good night's sleep.
We're also staying 450 metres away from the press room tonight, which is an absolute luxury.
I'm not with you anymore, am I?
No, we're getting rid of you. Hopefully none of us catch pneumonia after this, because we got a bit wet there, didn't we, Daniel?
Certainly did, yeah.
Daniel's hair is plastered to his face.
Well, I think we should leave that there. That's all for our live episode from Barcelona in the Alps. I seem to have taken over Richard's role as the host with the most. But so, Richard, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lionel.
And Daniel, thank you.
Thanks, Lionel.
This is a Telegraph cycling podcast live from the Tour de France, supported by Jaguar, with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney, and Daniel Free.